Hello, I'm Nick O'Day, and I work in the Materials Research Lab under Ram Seshadri. My mentors are Guillaume Leroux and Clayton Cozen. And today I'm going to be talking about white light sources and my research to make a high power density laser-based white light. The past 25 years have witnessed a transformation in lighting, in part brought on by the advent of LEDs, or light-emitting diodes. LEDs are a subset of solid-state lighting, which uses semiconductors to produce light efficiently and safely. The United States Department of Energy estimates that by 2030, we'll be saving $40 billion a year just from the growing adoption of LEDs. But LEDs aren't the only kind of solid-state lighting. The Advanced Research Project Agency Energy, or ARPA-E, is funding research at UCSB to incorporate lasers into white light sources. The reason for this is that lasers operate in a higher current regime than do LEDs, opening up all new high-power applications. Different groups at UCSB are contributing differently. Some are designing the lasers themselves, making lasers at new wavelengths or at higher efficiencies. Some are developing the luminaires that will incorporate the lasers. My research looks at using the optical properties of these systems and using brightness and color metrics to select out the best possible lasers we can invest in order to have good white power lighting. Before I discuss more about lasers, it's important to understand conversion-based lighting in general. And that's the backbone of LEDs today and hopefully the lasers of tomorrow. You can get a regular old LED bulb that will work via a two-step conversion process. The first step uses it converts electricity to light using an LED. And an LED tends to have a limited wavelength range of light. Here I show it's blue. But in order to have a white light, we need more colors to cover more of the visible spectrum. And that's why we'll use a second conversion step with a phosphor. A phosphor is a material that can absorb certain wavelengths of light and convert them to warmer, lower energy colors. So when we pair a phosphor and LED together, the phosphor will absorb part of the blue LED emission and make reds and oranges, yellows and greens. And all of those colors will then mix to form a white light. It's a very potent combination, but we're looking at replacing the LED with a laser because lasers are able to operate at a much higher current regime than can LEDs. I have here a graph showing how the efficiency of LEDs compares to laser devices. And note the logarithmic current density scale at the bottom. So as we pump in more current density into the LED, its efficiency will drop off, whereas the laser device has increasing efficiency in a regime that the LED cannot even reach. Because of this, this means that laser devices can open up whole new markets, such as very small projectors, car headlights, and stadium lighting. However, we need to make laser devices more efficient before they'll be competitive with other light sources. And that's where I come in. I look at the spectral distributions of laser and phosphor light to figure out the best combinations of the two. For example, I have a 450 nanometer laser, and you'll note how peaked it is about a single wavelength. One of the questions I seek to answer is, for a given phosphor, what's the best wavelength laser that we should develop? Here I have a really popular phosphor called cerium YAG, and it's popular because it's all around good. It has a broad emission that's bright and thermally stable. And when I try to look at these spectra, they have a lot of information encoded in them. So it shows the power by wavelength, and later on I'll show how I can use color and brightness metrics to get out information from these spectra. But I like to look at the combined laser and phosphor spectra and parameterize those by how much laser light the phosphor is absorbing. Because, for instance, if the phosphor were to absorb more laser light in this picture, the laser peak would decrease in size relative to the phosphor peak would grow. And so by sweeping between no laser light absorbed and all laser light absorbed, we're able to look at all the possible color combinations and brightnesses that can be created with a given laser and phosphor. Brightness is really interesting. So we can only see within the visible spectrum, but we treat different wavelengths very differently. So I have a graph showing the human eye response function. and it shows the relative brightness of a given wavelength. Greens and yellows are seen by the eye to be brighter. The eye is more sensitive to those colors, whereas reds and blues tend to die off more. And this has immediate results for our laser and phosphor system, because our phosphor spectra is very much in some of those greens and yellows. So we can anticipate that our phosphor is going to appear brighter than our laser. And as we pump more and more laser light to our phosphor, more of a fraction of our laser light absorbed by the phosphor, we'll get a brighter system. But we can't just convert all of the laser light to phosphor light, because if we did that, we would lose the blue component that we need to have white light. And that's why it's important to understand a chromaticity diagram that can describe colors of light. It was first made in the 1920s and 30s by an International Commission on Light. And it has several nice properties. One of them is that the edges show monochromatic light, so from 460 to 620 nanometers. And the colors closest to those numbers are the colors you would see with that single wavelength of light. And then mixtures of those wavelengths come in between. And here's an example of what the color points of a laser and phosphor look like. So that's the cerium YAG phosphor I was talking about earlier. And one of the nice properties of this diagram is that any possible color that you can see of a mixture of two, so if you have two color points and you want to know what a color will look like that's a mixture of the two, it will fall on the line between them. So for example, we'll only be able to reach colors between the laser and the phosphor. What I do with my model is I take track of all the different sources of loss and power gain. So I have a lot of bookkeeping there, so I can track just how much laser light needs to be absorbed by the phosphor in order to have a white light color, in order to fall at a specific color along this line. I then use that spectra with the eye response function to figure out the brightness of that point. So I'm able to back out both brightness and color from those spectral distributions. This gives some really nice results. For example, earlier in our project, we were thinking about using very low wavelength violet lasers. So that would be something like a 415 nanometer laser. But I showed, here I have the line showing all the possible colors it can reach, and it's red where it fails to meet our brightness goals. So I showed that with a 415 nanometer laser, we wouldn't be able to get bright color, and we wouldn't be able to have a bright system and a white system simultaneously. It would only achieve enough brightness closer to the cerium YAG color point. Whereas with a 450 nanometer laser, which is more in the blue regime, we have more leeway. You can see that we achieve our brightness goals, that white line, much earlier on, allowing us to have a greater flexibility with color and able to reach our brightness and color goals simultaneously. Since then, I've added on to this foundation more and more. I've looked at having multiple phosphor systems. I've looked at the ways that phosphors can absorb different wavelengths of light differently. I think it's a very powerful foundation because it's able to describe lasers based off their spectral distributions without them even having to exist. We can predict their light properties and thus use the color and brightness metrics to select out what the best lasers we want to invest in are. Beyond the growth, I also hope to add in more color metrics to be able to better describe our final light sources. I talked about color and brightness, but there's also questions of how objects are rendered with a light, if they really match the color that they should. All of these are future considerations, and I'm very glad that I've been able to share with you how I'm trying to make the world a brighter place. Thank you.
Have you tried at all exploring lasers outside of the visible spectrum?
Yes. So, for example, there was the idea to use ultraviolet in order to pump a blue phosphor that would provide blue light. But there's some subtleties in this, such as what's known as the Stokes shift. So when a phosphor converts a wavelength of light to a lower energy, that energy is lost. So when we convert, let's say, from ultraviolet to blue, that entails an energy loss. And so that's something to keep in mind, that if we use an ultraviolet pump, then we would have an even greater loss because ultraviolet's more sort of wattage per photon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So working at such high powers of lasers, do you have to worry about bleaching your dye at all, or your phosphor?
So the cerium YAG is very thermally stable, but there are some questions about how hot our samples are going to get. For example, if you were to put this in silicone, so there's silicone filled with phosphor particles, it could potentially burn if you were to use this sort of system. But we're looking at things like single crystals and ceramic phosphors that have good thermal properties. Yeah.
I heard you talk about for the laser, it can work at a larger current density regime. What's the advantage for a light source to work in that regime?
So you can get more light out of a smaller chip is one of the main advantages. So you'll have less manufacturing that you need to do for an equivalent amount of brightness. So you can imagine if we needed to manufacture 100 LEDs for a given laser, that would have manufacturing costs associated with it. And then also there's certain applications that would be nice to have very dense light, so light coming from a very small source.
You showed this. Can you go back to this graph with where you connect? Yeah, this one. How do you define where you end up on this line?
So I use a power balance. So I can, if I have a minute to write on the board, I can draw it. But thanks. So I look at the fraction of laser light absorbed, and I say our overall system will have an efficiency that's determined by how well the laser converts electricity to light. I look at the fraction of laser light absorbed, and that determines the amount of phosphor light we have. So the amount of phosphor light will be proportional to that. Then there's an internal loss mechanism, the Stokes shift that I mentioned earlier. There is an external loss mechanism called the quantum yield, which tells you how many photons are successfully converted. And then here, these are the laser and phosphor distributions. So I look at overall their wavelengths, and I integrate over brightness and color.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.